Good morning. This is Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with Thought for Today. What is the thought for today? The thought for today is, I like me more than I could ever imagine. Now, why do I like me more than I could ever imagine? Because every time I touch myself, I say, oh, that feels so good. And that's the way you should do it. You don't go slap, slap, slap. You say, gentle, oh, and kiss your hands, and kiss your arms, and kiss your feet, and kiss your nose. How do you kiss your nose? Well, my dog Rex can kiss his nose. His tongue is big enough to wash his whole face if he wants to do it. And yours is too, mentally. Mentally, you can kiss yourself on the middle of your back. And you don't even have to be contortionist to do it. But mentally, you can do anything, because you just visualize yourself doing it. Now, our body is waiting for the sunrise. Our body is waiting for the sunrise. It's been born, and it's been around, but it's waiting for the sunrise. It's waiting for that moment when it hears the wonderful words, I like you. I like you, I like you, I like you. Oh, hey, that's nice, that's nice. So I'll cut this off here, and I'll lay this over here. That's my hand. I cut off my hand. I'm laying it over there. And then I go over to my hand, and I say, I like you, I like you, I like you. And that could be possible. But when my hand is connected to my body here, I have to say, it's me. That's me. That's me. Is that hand me?
Yes.
So I say, I like me. I say, I like me to my hand. My hand is so nice, you know, tastes good too. My fingers are so nice, and everything about me is so nice. Now, you say, but what about if I've got arthritis, and I've got rheumatism, and I've got these other things? That's fine. You haven't been saying, I like me, to your body, and so therefore, it gets its own little games. Rheumatism comes in and says, I'll be nice to you, I'll go all over you, and I'll make you feel that I'm present, you know, and that I'm there. And you say, well, all right, you know. And so the rheumatism and arthritis are roaming around your body saying, gee, this is nice. We got the whole place to ourselves. Nobody else cares, you know. And so then you come in there and you say, ahem, George. See, the rheumatism name is George. George, you're my brother-in-law. And if you want a place to live, you get your own house. Well, I have no place to go. Sorry, George, you're not welcome here. Why am I not welcome? Well, you drink and you smoke and you tell bad stories, and you're not welcome here. And so George says, but I'm your brother-in-law. You can't kick me out. Ho, ho, you watch. It's you and my husband, or just my husband and me, one or the other. The two of you go, if you're going to be together, and you're going to hang around together. And then your husband says, I don't even know him, you know. And you're the one who knows him. And so you say, George, I think it's time you pack up your bags and go. My arm is whole and perfect. I love you. George, out! You know, and then every time that little quick comes up and says arthritis or rheumatism, you say, out! George, you don't belong here. You haven't paid your rent. You don't belong here. I wouldn't accept your rent from you. Out, out, out! And so pretty soon, your body says, boy, I like a take charge person. Now I got a take charge person taking charge of me, telling me that I'm whole and perfect, telling me that I got a beautiful body, telling me I have a beautiful mind, I have a beautiful world, and telling me that this is a wonderful world we live in. Hello, world! I love you, I love you, I love you, you know. Aren't you glad I didn't put the earphones in? Now, you see, the thing is, this is what you want to do. You want to live a happy, happy, happy life and be happy. And you can't be happy with arthritis and rheumatism. Now, you can go and buy all of the glucomacapacumsham and all these other pills and all these things that the doctors have to give you. And what's going to happen to you? It'll stop. But then, the minute you let your guard down, it's back again. Mm-hmm. It's back again because it's a thought. Medicine can take it away. You can take a pill for mentally instability and stuff like that, and it'll relax you so that you can be more balanced. But the thing is, the imbalance is still there because you have given it a place to be in your world. You know what it feels like to be there. And the minute you feel insecure, you'll say, uh-oh, I'm mentally unbalanced again. Uh-oh. And you see, you name it, claim it, and give it the entrance. And you say, oh, I got that arthritis back again. I can feel it. No. You know, I tell you, take a nap in the afternoon. Not because you have to or not because you should, but I want you to go against your principle. Your principle is that you get up and you go to bed. You get up in the morning, you live your day, and at night you go to bed. You don't go to bed in the middle of the day. No normal, healthy person goes to bed in the middle of the day. Now, little children are not normal, healthy, and they're not proper. But little children, when they are playing and they just feel tired, they lay down and go to sleep. They don't care where they are. They can be in the middle of the living room floor. They can be out in the playground. They just sit at the fence, you know, and then 10 minutes later they get up, full of energy, and you don't say, well, you old coot, you need to have your rest, huh? So you're getting so old, you're getting so decrepit. No, they're little. They're young people. And they take their naps, and they take it when they feel they need it. Now, you don't do that. You don't listen to your body. When your body says, hey, I've had just enough of this now, let's take a short break. We don't need a long sleep. We'll just take a 10-minute nap, and you're back in business again. Because what you've done, you've let your body reassess itself to its original purity and integrity, get back into gear again, get back into harmony with itself and all that it is, and then, wow, you're ready to go. The big executives, top executives who are not mentally going crazy, but the top executives, they all put a sign on their door, so to speak, don't disturb me for 10 minutes. This is my think time. Ooh. They're going to take a nap. Yeah, but this is their think time. This is their time when they're going to rewind their batteries. This is the time when they're going to readjust themselves and forget all of the anxieties that they had up to that moment so they can think properly about what they want to think about. And this is, why do they have think tanks? You know, these are, and what's the, who dwells in a think tank? The brilliant ones. The geniuses, they are in the think tanks. They are the ones who are thinking, and they're not expected to be doing something magical or to be looking alert. They're just sitting back, and they even fall asleep. And you don't say, they're sleeping. They're thinking. They really are thinking. You think they're sleeping because they give the evidence of sleeping, but they're not. Now, sometimes when you guys talk to me, all of you, and I'm sitting there, and I'm waiting for you to tell me what you want to talk about, anything. And you just are reluctant to do it. And so I just sit there and wait, and then I drift away, and I go off to another dimension, and I have a beautiful experience. And I come back relaxed, and I say, well, now, have you decided what it is that you would like to share? Have you decided? Yeah, you all know about that, don't you? And then you say, oh, you took a nap. Oh, I did. You'd love to have a nap like I have, I tell you. You really would. Because when I take a nap, I am in an interesting circumstance. And I even sometimes come back with threads of where I was. And if I'm giving a lecture and I'm drifting off because I'm waiting for the group to gather together again, I will say a few things of where I was, and they'll say, what was that? I didn't understand why that was fitting into this. And you're right, you didn't understand it, and that's okay. But anybody who wants me in their world for any reason, or anybody who wants anybody else in their world for any reason, if you will give that person 100% of your attention, not just asking them to do something, but give them 100% of you, they will be on deck with you 100% of the time. But the minute you start thinking that they have to do all of the thinking and talking for you, rather than you listening to your own inner self, then they'll soon lose interest in being with you. A teacher doesn't want to be with a child where the teacher has to say, 2 times 2 is 4, 2 times 2 is 4, 2 times 2 is 4. You say it. You say it. Not me. What's the matter with you, teacher? Don't you know the answer to the question? 2 times 2 is 4, you know? And when a child does that, then the child merely has to come to the realization that this is a technique. And the technique is, either you say 2 times 2 is 4, or I'll take my hand and I'll whomp you. You'll hit me? Sure. You'd hit the child? Sure. Oh, that's terrible. No, it isn't. When does a father love his child the most? When he gives him a spanking. When does a father hate his child? When he doesn't give him a spanking when he should have a spanking. You know what I mean? When the father doesn't discipline the child, when it calls for discipline, the father shows no love at all. In fact, the father shows absolute disregard, because the child has no guidance. If the child needs guidance of a spanking, my dad often said, if I have to get my belt off, be ready. And he never had to. But he just made the threat. And we behaved right away, because we knew he was serious. Because we'd pushed him over the edge. We'd pushed him over the point of him saying, I don't pay attention to you kids. That's up to your mother, you know. And this is what your body is doing to you. Our body is doing this to us all the time. It's saying, what do you want? What do you want? What do you want? What do you think you want? You know, we'd say young people have healthy bodies, basically. There's a few sick people, but basically young people have healthy bodies, right? And young people up to the age of 30 or 40 have healthy bodies. When you get to be 40, then your eyes go and this goes and that goes. Why? Because people say, when you get to be 40, your eyes goes and this goes and that goes. Now, don't you think it's about time we begin changing that? Now, what's happening in our statistics department? Our statistics department is telling us we are living longer. The insurance statistics are saying we're living longer. We're living to our 80s now. We're living to our 90s. If you are living when you are 50, you should be able to be 90 years old before you go. You should be able to be maybe 100. And if you're living in your 80s and you're, you know, in good health, you should easily live to be 110 or better, you know. And these are things that the statistics department tells us. What did the statistics department say when Jesus was here? What was the age of departure? 33, when Jesus left, you know. And what was the departure of some of the early tribes of people? 10, 12, 14 years.
Oh.
Yeah. They died very young. Very young. And the reason they died very young was because they believed that they were going to die young. Not only that, but they lived a very dangerous life. They lived a very dangerous life. Now, what happened as the tribes grew on? What happened as the communities grew on? There, the protective, loving presence of a family was there, or a community was there, giving a person security and a feeling of desiring to have a longer life. You see, we don't have any records of back in the pre-Paleolithic days and so forth when mankind was living in short-lived times and stuff. We don't have any record of it. We know that because we know all things, but we don't have any records because there are no groups around. And the tectonic plates that were moving around changed all those things to take away all those evidences from us. But we don't need to be concerned about that. Sybil is living right now. And Sybil is X years old. And Sybil has lived X years. And Sybil has made a mistake. She has grabbed the wrong end of the stick. Instead of going from baby to adult, she's going from adult to more youthfulness. More youthfulness every day. She's getting more and more youthful, more and more youth. She doesn't realize that she's going the wrong direction. her train's going backwards. But she is being the glorious being that she is, but she's getting younger. And it's not a matter of getting younger. She's getting more dynamic. But it is. Whatever a younger person would do is what she's doing now. Whatever a younger person would think is what she's thinking. Well, however a younger person would act, she's acting. And younger people act with great ease, lack of any fear, lack of any concern that they might be doing something wrong or something's dangerous. Young people like A-D-V-E-N-T-U-R-E, don't they?
Adventure.
Oh, yes, they do. Young people love adventure. Well, just remember, as long as you still love adventure, you're young. And so when you stop loving adventure, then you might as well fold it up right away. Right away. Right away before you give it up entirely. So get out there and ride your bikes. Put on your ski boards, your snowboards, your skateboards, and put on your jogging shorts, your naked shorts, and get out there and get into the sun. And we had our 3 months. School of the Master here. Let your heel alone. We had our 3 months School of the Master here, and everyone was naked here during that 3 months School of the Master. Everyone. And everyone came here from a variety of experiences of being in the sun. And I offered them all suntan lotion. And virtually none of them used it. At the end of the 3 months, none ever had a burn. Not one little bit. Nobody had any sunburn. Everybody was brown as a bear. Everyone was healthy as a bear. Really healthy. Because I fed them perfect foods, which were blessed, and they blessed them, and the foods were blessed, and everything they did was absolutely perfect. When they left here, with the mental attitude and the physical attitude and everything about them, they were ideal. And then they went back home to do what they used to do, and they pretty much all returned to where they were. And then they wondered why they did not achieve mastership. And then I told them something that shook them up a little bit. Those who were here with you who achieved mastership, you don't even remember their names, you don't even remember they were here, because they now are living in that master consciousness awareness, and they are not aware to you. You don't even remember they were there. Because they had a spiritual healing, if I can call it that. Now, spiritual healing is this. When you have a spiritual healing, say for a cancerous body, when you have a spiritual healing, it's like that. And your body is returned to its original purity and integrity. No hospital will have a record of ever treating you, even though many did. No doctor will ever remember having treated you for cancer, even though many did. There will be no records of x-rays and all that sort of stuff that they did on you, because this is a spiritual healing. It never happened. And this is what those who were at the School of the Master and let themselves follow the program absolutely without fighting one little bit, just flowing with it, as many of them did. These kids did too, but the thing is, they fought, and they're still fighting. They're still fighting me. It's imagine. I can't imagine why anyone would fight me. I'm just not conditional love. But they do, because they don't want to have it happen. Because it's like saying to your arthritis, oh, you've got to go. Aren't you going to stay here with me? Aren't you going to be with me all my life? You know. And people, they love their arthritis. And they love to tell you about their arthritis. And yet, people who have a spiritual healing can't tell you about it because they don't even remember that it was ever part of their life. And they don't speak about it, they don't think about it, and they're not it. Now, where are you on this game that we're playing? Where are you? Do you want spiritual healing? Oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, if you have it, you will not have anything to ever tell anybody. See, here's my appendix. Here's my this and my that. You know? Be careful. Because when you have a spiritual healing, you'll be living on a different dimension of awareness, maybe right here among us, but a different dimension of awareness. And then you will be invisible to anyone unlike yourself. Only a master can see another master. And when you are in a master consciousness, you'll see other masters. And when you think you're in a master consciousness, but you're not, then you'll see people who are close to master consciousness, but they're still hanging on to little things that they want to have. Don't take that away from me. Yeah. And I say, Ingeborg, think I like me only. And Ingeborg says, but let me tell you about my knee. Let me tell you about this. Oh, Ingeborg, you know. And she can't let that go. She can't let that go. The hurt of her toe. I got to blow my nose. I got to do this. Stop. Stop. I hypnotize you. And when you're hypnotized, your conscious mind is no longer in control. You are just you. You don't have to blow your nose. You don't have to do anything. Your autonomic nervous system is functioning your body perfectly, and you just function. And you don't need to do all. But then your conscious mind comes back. Oh yes, I was going to sneeze. Oh yes, I got an itch here. Oh yes, you know. And when you're subliminal to that, you don't even know it. So you see, we do live in such a wonderful world. They say, well, all right, let's hypnotize everybody. No. Because then you're not in charge. Then you're not the master. Then the lack of consciousness is the master, not the total consciousness. You are consciously aware you're a master. You're consciously aware you're whole and perfect. You're consciously aware of life is good. People who are mentally unstable, who are mentally insane, they are people who have chosen to take another level of awareness to escape the things that they were going through in their life. We don't know what they were going through, but they were going through something in their life. Some terrible vision of the night that was destroying them. And we don't know what it is. And we don't want to know. The psychiatrists try to find it out, but they don't want. But the psychiatrists are going at it wrong. If the psychiatrist, instead of trying to find out the problem, would work on the solution, what's the solution for a person who's mentally unstable? Quick!
I'm whole and perfect.
I'm whole and perfect. Nothing else to it. All right, psychiatrists work on their whole and perfect, your whole and perfect, your whole and perfect, your whole and perfect, your whole and perfect. Then what happens? Then that which you think about, as a man thinketh in his heart, that which you think of, that's what happens to you. Now, when you have anyone in your family who has a mental aberration that bothers them, and you see them that way, that's bad. Now, Henry has told me about some of his family and some of the world about him and some of the adventures he's been through, and I say to Henry, now, Henry, that's past, let the past be past. Never say it again to anybody at any time about anything you don't want to continue being done. You would like to see everybody in your world whole and perfect, just like you are. And if you ever say, my wife was mentally ill, my wife had a problem, my wife did this, then what happens? That's what you are. That if your wife were that way and you couldn't see it because you were so pure, beautiful. But because you're not pure, you can see her having an impure situation. Interesting, isn't it? You see, no one's exempt to this, are we, Ingeborg?
Yes.
No one's exempt to this. We all are responsible, and we all wake up to these things and put our minds on these things, and we know that a master sees another master. So, my loves, everyone, you here and you out there on the internet, however many may be, who knows, we may have millions out there on the internet listening, and we may just have 8 or 10. But I know I hear from at least 8 or 10 of you. But it's wonderful. And each one of you, 8 or 10 or a million, whichever, or all, are worthy of every good thought, I think. And I see each one of you whole and perfect now. I see each one of you graduates of the School of the Master who are seeing everything in your life whole and perfect. And I don't bless you with this because it's really not a blessing, but I conceive of you having the experience of being spiritually healed. Spiritually healed. All that is unlike your original purity and integrity is washed away from your being. And all that remains is your original purity and integrity. And we didn't take any acids to wash it away. We didn't take any scrub soaps. We didn't take any special detergents to move it away. All we did was to move in with our, oh, when the saints come marching in, oh, when the stem cells come marching in, oh, when the stem cells, 10,000 every day, come from my brain. Everything in my body is returned to my original purity and integrity. Now, how about that? Have a lovely day. No, I love you, I love you, I love you.